Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through, and we continue with a relevant study of the book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature, the kind of literary genre that surfaces when the people of God, the faith community, face trials and tribulations at the hand of secular kingdoms and forces. It is a revelation of the ultimate triumph of God's kingdom over all the kingdoms of man, and in spite of the fierceness of the world empires, they will be subdued by the awesome power of God's reign over the hearts of man. Here's Dr. Gregory Donation, resident minister at Juvenile Mission, in part two of Facing the Furnace.
Welcome to what I believe is like a cozy fireside chat, as we discuss the book of Daniel. Last time we looked at the milieu and the background, and it was that of a cultural situation where the people of God were in exile. They are in Babylon, and it's godless, and, you know, it's secular. And very often you find it's loaded with occult and mystical stuff that contaminates the purity of the faith of the people of God. And Daniel and his friends had to face serious persecution and hardship during their stay in exile, especially initially. Their faith was tested. They were on trial. And it was by the grace of God and by his presence that they actually survived. And throughout that whole time, they remained faithful. But we will look at the message more in detail later on as we progress with the interpretation of this book. We said last time we would have a look at the technical structure of the book of Daniel. We mentioned that this is not a prophecy, even though it is located in the segment amongst the prophetic books like Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Isaiah and so on. Daniel is found there. He was actually an administrator. He was a civil servant, so he was working in the government. But God revealed to him the things that were going to unfold in the near future, because God did not want God's people to be without understanding and without a context in which they can live out their faith, even if it meant persecution, hardships, and difficulty. We did mention that even though Daniel was not technically a prophet, the Lord Jesus referred to him in Matthew 24, verse 15, as the prophet Daniel. What this book tells us is that God is sovereign over the nations. Events may unfold as they do, but God is always in control, and everything plays out as he wills and as he decreed. Now, when you look at the chapters in the book of Daniel, chapter 1 is written in Hebrew, the whole of the chapter. It's written in Hebrew. Then you come to chapter 2, to chapter 3, chapter 4, 5, 6, and 7, and it's written in Aramaic. Now, it's interesting that the text, the letters that are used, the alphabet that is used, is very much the same as Hebrew. There's very little difference, but it's like a different style of writing altogether, different vocabulary, different words, a different form. It's a language all by itself, Aramaic, even though they use the same letters. I mean, it's like English. You have English, it's written with the Roman letters, but so is Spanish. Spanish is also written with Roman letters, letters that we have in the English alphabet. But, of course, it's a completely different language. Just because you can read the letters A, B, C, D, doesn't mean you'll be able to understand Spanish. That's how it is between Hebrew and Aramaic as well. Then when you come to chapter 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, you have what is written in Hebrew again. So chapter 1 is written in Hebrew. Chapter 2 to chapter 5 is written in Aramaic. Chapter 8 to chapter 12, once again, is written in Hebrew. Now, Of course, that begs the question, was this done for a reason? Is there a method in this madness? Why would you have the book of Daniel written in two different languages, starting off with Hebrew, going over into Aramaic, and then coming back to Hebrew again? What was the purpose? What was the sense of that? Well, you will find that the book of Daniel sets the standard for apocalyptic literature, and Revelation builds on that. And you see that exactly the same thing happens. Although it's all written in Greek, it's also structured in the same way. And the structure allows you to interpret the message correctly, because the message is bound up also in the structure. So the reason why the book is divided the way that it is divided into these Hebrew and Aramaic sections is because it's functional. It first addresses the Hebrew people, and then it addresses the heathen nations. And what is written there between chapter 5 and 7 is a historical unfolding of God's dealing with pagan and heathen nations. That's why another language was used, the language that was the colloquial speech at that time, the lingua franca. That was Aramaic. Everybody spoke Aramaic. It was a common commerce language, commercial language. And so God had a word for the heathen, and that's why he moved over to Aramaic. And then he comes back to Hebrew because he has a special word to say to his people, the Hebrew people. So the first section, we would call it Recruited to Serve. You will remember from what we read there, it says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jerusalem, and of course the king Jehoiakim, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. And then this is why I say the first section we can call Recruited to Serve. Verse 3 says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. So it was against that background that Daniel and his friends were selected. So we read in verse 6, among those who Ashpenaz went to go and enroll were some from Judah, and here they are mentioned in verse 6, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So the chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. I heard an African-American once referred to this passage and said, these were the three friends of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and a bad Negro. Now, he said that. He said that. And I thought it was quite funny, and he enjoyed it as well. It was a sense of humor. Now, these were the friends from Judah that were part of those that were selected. The whole chapter is about that. We can say this chapter heading could be Recruited to Serve, recruited from God's people to serve in the context of paganism, heathendom, and licentiousness. Recruited to Serve. Then when we come to the second chapter, we see the king's dream. Then we come to the third chapter, it's the exposure to the fiery furnace. We come to the fourth chapter, we see Nebuchadnezzar's pride. When we come to the fifth chapter, we see Belshazzar's pride. And the sixth chapter, Daniel in the lion's den. And then the seventh chapter, Daniel's vision. Of course, when we come to 8, we have another vision, Daniel's second vision. You come to the ninth segment, Daniel's prayer. The 10th is the third vision of Daniel. 11 and 12 concludes it. Now, what you'd have to do to appreciate the divisions of this book and how it is dissected, you would have to get a piece of paper, and then on the left-hand side of your piece of paper, you draw a block. And in that block, you put the words recruited to serve. Then slightly above that block, on just to the right of it, you can make another block the same size as the first block. Put the number 2 in it and put there the king's dream. Just below that, next to the first block, you draw another block. And like the second block and the first block, the same size. And you put there, inside that block, the fiery furnace. Then below that, so below the third block, you will put another block, the same size, and in there you will write Nebuchadnezzar's pride. And next to the one at the bottom, which is Nebuchadnezzar's pride, you do another block next to it, and you put in there Belshazzar's pride. And then above it, you put another block, which is next to the fiery furnace, which is the third block. You put that in that block, you put the lion's den, that is the sixth one. And the seventh one, which covers the Aramaic part of the word, is the seventh block, which is above the lion's den, next to the king's dream. You have Daniel's vision. Next time we will expound upon that a little bit clearer. But what you should have now on your piece of paper, maybe an A4 piece of paper that you put sideways, not a portrait, but a landscape layout. On the left-hand side of your landscape layout, you'll have your first block, probably about 30 millimeters by 50 millimeters. And that's number 1, recruited to serve. Next to it then, you would have the one right next to it, the third block, the fiery furnace. And next to that one, you would have the sixth block, the lion's den. So 3 blocks in a row next to each other, recruited to serve, the fiery furnace, the lion's den. Above them, you would have the king's dream and Daniel's vision. And below them, you would have Nebuchadnezzar's pride and Belshazzar's pride. I'll explain a little bit more about that when we meet again next time. I don't want you to be confused. I want it to be as clear as possible. But it's very necessary for you to do this drawing so that you would be able to have the whole outlay of the book of Daniel before you to understand how it was constructed and what the value of this construction is for the understanding of that book. I'm trusting that that is quite clear. Of course, there are 5 more chapters to follow, and we will maybe outline that next time. So, goodbye and God bless until we meet again.
And that was Dr. Gregory Donation in part 2 of Facing the Furnace, a relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature. Stay tuned for part 3, same time tomorrow, only on Good News Community Radio.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.